Paper 35, section 5, which is old single column, page 389. Okay, so last time we finished up what they're giving us up front here about the Melchizedeks, the highest of the three primary orders of local universe descending suns. Now we're ready to go on to the next group. So I think that's all the preface we need. Let's just jump in.
The Verandadect Suns. After the creation of the personal aids and the first group of the versatile Melchizedeks, the Creator Sun and local universe creative spirit planned for and brought into existence the second great and diverse order of universe sonship, the Verandadeks. They are more generally known as Constellation Fathers because a son of this order is uniformly found at the head of each constellation government in every local universe.
Okay, so let's use that little intro to think about the name Verandadek. Before we do that, did you notice what they did again? Notice how often they're going to do this. You know, they keep referring to those unrevealed personal aids. It's a very kind of curious little thing that's going on sort of behind the scenes as you're reading through this. I'm not quite sure what to make of that, but it's very, you know, excessive. Every time they can, they mention them in passing. So I don't know if we're supposed to be trying to somehow deduce what exactly they're about, because it's important and to understand something or what, but it's very noticeable that they keep referring, and they refer an awful lot to someone that they don't reveal. All over and over and over. So there they are again, see the personal aids of Gabriel. You know, the fact that it's in this context, maybe I'll just vamp on it for a second there. I mean, you know, it may be the more you understand the pattern of these suns, maybe you'll finally appreciate, wait a minute, there's one missing in the pattern. Oh, that's the personal aids. You know, maybe that's what's going on with that. But anyway, so you have those personal aids. You know, so it's seeming like someone that's more kind of up there at that very high level of Gabriel. Then you have all the Melchizedeks. And don't forget there's Father Melchizedek that's sort of up there at eye level with Gabriel also. And then down to the Verandadeks. Okay, so now, as I described last time with them taking the Hebrew name Melchizedek and sort of reworking it so that they've made a suffix for themselves. They're going to use that D-E-K thing as a suffix, and it's basically just going to mean expression. So you have some concept, and you're going to express it. And in this context, we're expressing orders of local universe descending suns. So we had the primary righteous order of, primary righteous expression of local universe descending suns, the Melchizedeks. Now we have Verandadek. And, you know, just when you see that prefix on that word they've coined, vor, you know, that sounds pretty Teutonic, pretty Northern European. You can see how they must be playing off of those sorts of roots. And, you know, they use both M-A and D-A in some words. You know, as a simple little root referring to father and mother, M-A and D-A, you know. And, you know, so here you have D-A, father. You know, they are the constellation fathers, you know, they immediately mention there. What they're getting at there is the vor means very, it's a strengthener prefix, it means very. And the O-N is always being used in words to mean akin to like. See, so it's very father-like expression of local universe descending sun. Is the literalness of it. So just again, strengthening that the fact that they're the constellation fathers. So the very fact that they reinforce that in the name, is, in other words, is the primary thing they want you to always have in mind when you're thinking of a Rondedeck, is that definitive father-like in contrast to the more mother-like mode of nature that that is the Melchizedek's. Okay.
I just wanted to be able to remember it. Yep. You can see that it's Verondad
Ek. Yeah.
Good memory.
Yeah, and of course, dad is just extension of da. That root, of course, just came from baby speak. Got into the language, but it's the fact that we have the word dad. We've taken that, and really made it a root, that D-A, and they're doing it here. They're picking up on that.
There's no Varan mom next, though. Right?
No, there aren't, no. Anyway, so of all the things that you can think of, what do they put in the coinage of the word? That's the thing that they want you to always have up front. If you're trying to figure out why is a Verondedeck, doing such and so, start there. Start with the name that they gave. It's like, okay, what are they most fundamentally? Very father-like expressions. Most of the time, if you just say that to yourself, it's like, oh, okay, it's obvious why they're doing that. Okay. They're trying to help us get right into the spirit of the truth of what they're about. Okay. Let's see. So let's keep going here.
The number of Verondedeks varies in each local universe. Just 1 million being, I just lost my spot. I don't even know. It jumped ahead on me like 5 papers. I need a book. The number of Verondedeks varies in each local universe, just 1 million being the recorded number in Nebadon. These sons, like their coordinates, the Melchizedeks, possess no power of reproduction. There exists no known method whereby they can increase their numbers.
Okay, so they've kind of given you a repeat of some of the things they said about the Melchizedeks. Now, you notice here, though, in the case of the Melchizedeks, they didn't give us a specific number. They said it was something more than 10 million. Okay, but here it's exactly 1 million. So note that contrast. There's obviously something more from the very beginning precise about producing Verondedeks than Melchizedeks. And what can you think of just right off the top of your head when we were just reading about in the last section about the Melchizedeks, a special work of the Melchizedeks? They're doing what? All kinds of emergency missions, right? Okay, are emergencies pre-planned? No. Okay, right. So you have to have some variability, obviously, in that number. Now, the fact that it varies from local universe to local universe, obviously there's that whole greater concept of how each Creator Son and Creator Mother Spirit know they need to vary their numbers of these sons depending upon the overall plan they have in their local universe. But this is an obvious thing that there's a less predeterminable number. So they don't produce something that's exactly some even thing where it's obviously just fitting into some precise numerical pattern, of things.
They're totally matured and knowledgeable the instant they're created.
Right, they're created as full mature adults. In the case of the Melchizedeks and the Verondedeks, they are also quite definitively righteous, the primary righteous expression like we have with the Melchizedeks. These are also quite righteous in expression. They come ready to go without any training even. You know, we've noticed that as we've read various beings. Some beings, even very, very high beings, don't come ready to go. They have to go through a whole bunch of training, say, in Havana. You know, or the whole central universe in general, or whatever. But other beings, you know, literally just hit the ground running.
Okay. So do they learn?
Yeah, they definitely learn, yeah. But they have all of the basics, you know, just built in, you know, to their genetics, you might say, you know, and that higher sense that they have a, you know, a definitive foundation upon which mind seats itself. Remember, this is, you know, that's why they, you know, they can do this. I mean, the mind doesn't have this in it, but when the mind attunes itself to their body, when the creative mother spirit minds them, it locks in a way where that teachable mind is immediately taught by what it attunes itself to. Just like when your adjutant mind engaged you, that teachable mind, as it's about ready to engage, is not taught anything. You know, it's a blank slate, but the second it engages and attunes to your genetics, it's been taught something. And so the initial things that it does, you know, that it is what it's been taught by your genetics. And that's how you start out. So here you have a very, you know, complex, definitive, very precise proper arrangement of energy nature that mind attunes to, and so boom, it's just massively taught the second it engages, and it can just hit the ground running with all kinds of abilities. Okay, let's see. You know, the fact that they're Constellation Fathers, you know, you probably remember, we'll get to it in a minute here, but, you know, there's three basically. Well, there's only 100 constellations, so, you know, a million is definitely a plenty for just that. So there's obviously a lot of variability, you know, in play as well. I mean, you know, it isn't like some of the beings we've seen where, you know, like let's say you're going to make reasons of days or something, you know, and, you know, you just make them precisely for the leaders, the number of leaders they need, and that's it. You know, there isn't any extra like this. So it's not a simplistic precision. But the fact that they can make exactly 1,000,000 is telling you something about how you know that you can make just exactly a certain number and that will work. Creator Mother Spirit and Creator Son and Creator Mother Spirit can know such things. But you notice these sons like their coordinates. So, you know, don't ever forget that we're in a local universe. It's a one turning. It's made one unified phenomenon because of the individuality of this whole, the Creative Mother Spirit. If for no other reason, who bestows mind upon every being? One individual. Who supplies the particular expression of the Holy Spirit, you know, that spirit core of the cosmic mind, who, you know, supplies that, you know, one being, Creative Mother Spirit. So everyone is encircled in one spirit ministry. Okay. So, you know, it's her, the fact of her as a mother, you know, that makes everything coordinated fundamentally. So hence there, that's why they're using the word coordinated there. And just like the Melchizedeks, they're, you know, they don't reproduce. Like we've mentioned, that's not always the case. Sometimes these creatures can procreate. Maybe not beings like themselves, but they can procreate in some way. All right.
In many respects, these sons are a self-governing body. As individuals and as groups, even as a whole, they are largely self-determinative, much as are the Melchizedeks. But Verondadeks do not function through such a wide range of activities. They do not equal their Melchizedek brethren in brilliant versatility, but They are even more reliable and efficient as rulers and far-seeing administrators. Neither are they quite the administrative peers of their subordinates, the Lunanidek system sovereigns, but they excel all orders of universe sonship in stability of purpose and in divinity of judgment.
Okay, so and they start out telling you that in many ways they're very similar in terms of integrity to the Melchizedeks by bringing up the self-governing like they did with the Melchizedeks. And, but the distinction, if you see what they're trying to get here, is unlike the Melchizedeks, where that fundamental integrity that allows them to be self-governing, you know, to most degrees, with the Melchizedeks, it was in a group that they had that integrity. Okay, the Varonidex have integrity in group as well, but they have a greater integrity as an individual. Okay, and again, it's the distinction. They're a very father-like expression. Father is the individuality of the parts. Okay, so if they're very father-like in expression, they're as a part, they're quite integrous. Okay, whereas the Melchizedeks, with their more mother-like nature, it's only in the context of the whole that they have the integrity, basically. But they're high enough being that, there's quite a bit in each part as well, like they said. But not as father-like, as these. So that's the basic distinction, really, between them. Is that these are much more individuated in integrity. They have a much more definitive oneness, much more definitive indivisibility. They can function better as an individual without, having any error issues cropping up. But that also means that they're not going to be as malleable, if you will. That versatility of the Melchizedeks. The more you make yourself a rock solid crystallized fact, you're not going to be very fluid-like, and you can morph into another form like the Melchizedeks can. See, so really it's just, you're talking about the exact same thing with those two issues. So they have a very definitive integrity, which means they're not so versatile. Okay, let's see. What else is in there? Now the thing that you see right at the end there, we're going to go down next, and we go down to Lunanidex. But, right there they're telling you why, and it's not immediately obvious, why there's one that's a sun that's even further down, because that apparently allows for an even greater administrative ability. See, they're not quite the administrative peers of their subordinates. See, so this whole bit about, superordinate, subordinate, is relative. In some ways, yes, the Melchizedeks are above the Varonidek's, but in other ways, no, it's the other way around. As we read, they're called the Most Highs, so, there's some ways where it's not just those two flipping. I mean, in some ways, the Varonidek's are higher than the Creator, Son, and Greater Mother Spirit. They're very high in some senses. So, keep that in mind. Don't think too simplistically, too linearly about these descending orders, thinking that in all senses they're degrading in some sense. That's not the case. In some ways, the farther you go down, the higher the quality. Okay. But you can see with the Lunanidex is a phenomenon that we see a lot in humans. You get a human who's really exceptional in some little area, it's going to be at the expense of the other areas. often, you know, quite definitively, you know, extremely, where, you know, they need someone close to them to kind of keep them from falling off of cliffs and stuff, because, you know, they're just so circumscribed. They can't navigate the world around them that well by themselves. You know, that's definitely the case with the Lannanidex. They're very brilliancy in this one area, but it's at the expense of the other areas. They've got a lot of blind spots. And the biggest blind spot is what they just referred to there, about the Varanidex being even more reliable and efficient as rulers and far-seeing. See? You know, that's very much what the Lannanidex, you know, miss. Is the extreme far-seeing consciousness, and even the Melchizedeks aren't as far-seeing as an individual. See, and again, that's that integrity. You know, the more they have that father-like definitive integrity, the more definitive and clear their far-seeing ability is. Where does that foresight, that far-seeing ability, come from in each of us? From your personality. It came from the Father. So again, very father-like, very far-seeing-like. Okay, you know, and that just, you know, should get you thinking about the differentials between men and women. You know, there's, a, you know, in terms of the centers of the bell curves, you know, and what they tell you, you know, I mean, and why that has to be. If, you know, a female has to make sure the kids don't fall off of cliffs or stick their hands on burners, and you know, if she's looking way off to the horizon, you know, that's not going to work. So she has some programming to really keep focused, you know, in the moment very intently, but that can be an issue for not looking up ahead, you know, whereas the guy tends to be the other way around. You know, he's looking up ahead but not looking, you know, where he's standing, and so he falls off the cliff while he's gazing at, you know, at the horizon. Okay. So, you know, it has to, it's a very complementary pair like that relative to this issue of far-seeingness. All right? Chris, yep?
There's a question that came up. Are our genetics assigned?
No.
Or randomly
assigned? There's nothing random in supremacy. Right. And I just answered the other question, you know, there. This is the thing to come to recognize about our genetics. When scientists, you know, with a pure material eye, gaze upon the process of how it came to be that you have a particular sequence of genes in your chromosomes, it goes, well, it looks like there's some definite random processes there. No, there's nothing random. You know, it's just like the relators. The hand that brought that particular sequence of genes together is not an overt, upfront, father-like hand where scientists or even revelators can see it. Again, it's the whole. And you don't forget, it's a whole. There's nothing random in the whole. Every part is a part of a whole. You know, and in supremacy, there's no coincidences about, you know, what DNA got put in each of us. When all is said and done, we'll look back and coincidentally, an apparently random process, you know, led to certain DNA, and look at that. When my personality can finally fully express in supremacy, it's exactly the DNA that it should have been. You know, the two hands, the hands of the mother and the hand of the father, don't apparently are apparently working together at the beginning, but they are. You know? And you don't recognize that till kind of the end. And then you can really see just how non-coincidental, non-random it was, that process that went on, you know, and produced a particular fertilized egg that became you.
Some other end of the bell curve.
Right. But again, see, that's the thing, you know, there's, you know, you have this fixed personality that engaged that experimental world mortal You know, and you see, it's just all the more cool when all is said and done, when you can look back and it's like, wow, you know, it just didn't seem like it was a match made in heaven to begin with, but it was. Let's see. Now, where were we?
Although the decision.
Okay, let's see. Just, yeah, let me make sure. We finished everything up there. Yeah, go ahead.
Although the decisions and rulings of this order of sons are always in accordance with the spirit of divine sonship and in harmony with the policies of the Creator's Son, they have been cited for error to the Creator's Son. And in details of technique, their decisions have sometimes been reversed on appeal to the superior tribunals of the universe. But these sons rarely fall into error, and they have never gone into rebellion. Never in all the history of Nebadon has a Veranda deck been found in contempt of the universe government.
Okay, so you can see it's there's kind of indicating in passing that it's a situation very similar to the Melchizedek's. You know, there's no potential for evil. They're that high in nature, but there can be a little bit of error occasionally, and not a mistake.
No,
that's evil.
Okay, an error.
Yeah. Unwise judgment, yes, but not mistaken judgment. Remember what the prefix M-I-S means. It means wrong, like right and wrong, mm-hmm. good and bad, evil, you know, not. That's one of the things we have to challenge ourselves. We use mistaken very flippantly, but it's not in the Revelation it's not used, you know, flippantly like that. I made a mistake, you know, I picked up the salad fork and ate my dinner with it. No, that's not evil. Yeah, and yeah. It's against the mores, perhaps, but yeah. But whether or not it goes all the way to unwise judgment, I don't know. That's maybe pushing it. But anyway, just keep that in mind. Back here. But, you know, they say that it's very rare. Now that, you know, is going to be universal. See, they're very father-like. There's, you know, the same very father-likeness, the same integrity in every local universe. It's going to be very, very rare that they're even going to, you know, have a little blind spot in terms of fact and figment, sort of, you know, of error. But remember, they mentioned for the Melchizedek's, that's not the case. But for our Melchizedek's, they're more integrous than the norm. So it may be that our Melchizedek's and our Verondadek's are kind of equal in integrity. Whereas in another local universe, the Verondadek's would definitively stand out, you know, much fewer citations for a little error than the Melchizedek's in that local universe. Okay, so for our case, you know, the Veronidex and the Melchizedek, again, see, they're very similar. See, then there's about the only thing that distinguishes them is that whole versatility. You know, one is more crystallized, one is more fluid, but otherwise they're pretty similar in nature. Okay, let's see. Yeah, I'll keep going here.
The service of the Verondadek's in the local universes is extensive and varied. They serve as ambassadors to other universes and as consuls representing constellations within their native universe. Of all orders of local universe sonship, they are the most often entrusted with the full delegation of sovereign powers to be exercised in critical universe situations.
Yeah, that last part is, of course, obvious from what we've been stressing. Because of their individual integrity. Remember they mentioned about the ambassadors of the Melchizedek's. So I mean, and remember an ambassador, you know, in this context of the Revelation, here is an individual that is going to represent their local universe to another local universe. So that's an ambassador. So both Verondadek's and Melchizedek's serve as ambassadors like that, so they're against you, they're very similar. However, since the Verondadek's are so definitively seated at the constellation level, They also serve in that next notch down. Below ambassadors are consuls, like consulates, you know. And that, you know, is where you're representing your constellation to a neighboring constellation, or representing your constellation up at the local universe headquarters. So either horizontally or one notch vertically. Okay, so they also serve in that. So there's, you can see why you need more than just the ones, you know, for being the head of the constellation. You can see some of them being used right there. Let's see. All right, so yep, keep going.
On those worlds segregated in spiritual darkness, those spheres which have, through rebellion and default, suffered planetary isolation, an observer Verandadec is usually present pending the restoration of normal status. In certain emergencies, this most high observer could exercise absolute and arbitrary authority over every celestial being assigned to that planet. It is of record on Salvington that the Verandadecs have sometimes exercised such authority as most high regents of such planets. And this has also been true even of inhabited worlds that were untouched by rebellion.
Okay, so, you know, let's, you know, get the in the proper perspective first with that very last statement. Yeah, that should begin your thought. Forget about rebellions and defaults. I mean, it could be just the most, you know, splendidly normal, you know, running like a clock world. But the Verandadec, you know, the Verandadec observer says, hold everything. I assume regency. I'm now in charge. You know, and I'm going to move things around. He steps in, overrules all of the planetary authorities and everything, okay, and does things differently. Okay, why? Remember what they said, far-seeing. Okay, all the beings in charge are not as far-seeing as he is. So, you know, they look to their horizon and it looks like everything is lined up perfectly. But he sees, you know, 50 times further, and he notices that they're off by, you know, 1 milliarcsecond. You know, and if you carry that forward for 10 million years, we're going to be way off track. So we're going to correct it right now. Okay? Yeah, we're going to get to that in a second, yeah. But what are you getting at here?
Is there another pattern of that type of ministry?
A similar thing relative to the local universe is the Ancients of Days. Okay? I mean, a Creator Son and a Creator Mother Spirit of a local universe are the gods of that local universe. There's a God higher up in the hierarchy, you know, and they serve underneath that higher God. The Ancients of Days of their super universe, you know, have authority over them in a number of areas. You know, even when he's a master son, that particular creator son, there's still the God of the super universe in which he's in. I mean, he has to. You know, he's putting himself in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity, you know, and who is the Trinity representative at the top of the super universe? Those Trinity origin beings, the Ancients of Days. Right? See, so, you know, that's, you know, how it works that they're dominant. You know, it's because the Master Son has put himself in, you know, in full will consecration to their will. You know, he's going to do the will of the Paradise Trinity, so saith the Ancients of Days, in this super universe. You know, that's step one for him. And then within that space, he does his own free will. As God, you know, which is obviously has a lot of liberty to it, right? But, and see, and the fact that that's the immediate example that you can think of, like I've mentioned so many times, the Most Highs have this very tight relationship, see, with the Ancients of Days. So when they are overruling, see, in a sense, it's that higher authority that's been, you know, given to them in emergency situations. You know, so in a sense, they're kind of exercising the authority of the Ancients of Days. Okay, over definitely the local circumstances, the local rulers and stuff, but even over the Creator Son and the Creator Mother Spirit. Because like you pointed out, what does it say there? Absolute, right? The Most High Observer, you know, could become, you know, set himself up as Most High Regent and exercise absolute authority. In other words, it's as if the Universal Father, I mean, because that's the Absolute Father, okay? He exercises absolute authority as a very Father-like, yeah, very Father-like, all the way to absoluteness, overruling. You know, and so again, you know, who's higher, the Creator Son, a God, or a creature, a Verondadek Son? Well, it isn't always as it initially appears about who's in, you know, who's above whom. Okay, so.
I doubt they fight over there.
No, but because, yeah, you know, of course they don't. You know, they're in perfect agreement. But it's just, but it recognizing that there's an overruling, and that's the other part. Arbitrary. Okay, what do they mean arbitrary? Does it mean the Verondadex love to play dice? They roll, you know, they just roll the dice. It's like, you know, snake eyes. What does that mean? What does arbitrary authority mean? It means that if there are, you know, that there's certain rules. Well, I mean, you know, there are certain rules, but those rules can be overruled. To exercise arbitrary authority is to overrule the established rules. To be an exception to the rule, okay? Who's, you know, in terms of the top of the local universe, who sets the rules? Creator Son, Creator Mother Spirit, okay? To exercise arbitrary authority is to override the Creator Son's and Creator Mother Spirit's rules in the local universe, because they see, they're so far seeing, they see beyond the local universe, okay? And they're putting it in the bigger context. Okay, so, you know, so in that sense, see, of the rules again, you know, I'll take you back and remind you about that sentence when they were talking about Father Melchizedek. You know, and they said, Gabriel and the Father Melchizedek are never away from Salvington at the same time. Okay, how do you know that's a statement of a rule and not a statement of historical fact? Okay. Look at it closely. It doesn't say Gabriel and the Father Melchizedek have never been away from Salvington. It doesn't say that. Because if it did, then that would be an incorrect statement. Okay? They have been away at the same time. Okay? The rule is, it's present tense, are. Gabriel, the Father Melchizedek are never away from Salvington at the same time. That is just a statement of a rule. Okay? Someone can overrule that rule, you know. And you know, I told you, if you haven't done it yet, go do your little research and go read what, you know, Emmanuel is saying to the Creator Son and to Gabriel there in the, you know, in the beginning of part four, when he's, you know, putting everything forward, you know, about how the things are going to go during the seventh epistle. One of the specific things that Emmanuel says is, I am overruling your rules. Okay? In particular, that one. He says, Gabriel and, you know, and all of those with you, like the Father Melchizedek and all your, you know, all these unrevealed assistants and all this, okay, all of you are released from your normal duties. Like one of you having to be on duty on Salvington, you know, for instance. Yeah, he overrules that. Okay? So, just, I wanted to stress that. It's very important, you know, to appreciate this part. You know, these beings are not machines. They're beings. Okay? And even if there's, you know, these rules, you know, you can imagine how big the rule book is, you know, trillions of pages long, okay? But they don't function as machines. They're persons, okay? And some of them are persons that can wield a lot of free will authority and overrule any sort of a machine-like thing, any sort of a rule-dominated phenomenon, you know, in a domain, okay? I mean, I'm stressing this because it's, you know, often we get kind of stuck in how mechanical a lot of this stuff that they're describing is. I mean, don't miss things like that where you've just seen someone who's saying, you know, you've got a supreme rule, you've got an ultimate rule. Well, I'm going to exercise absolute authority. I'm going to overrule your ultimate rule. I'm going to overrule you, architects of the master universe. Because you can only put forward ultimate rules. I'm going to wield absolute authority. Okay? That kind of overruling of a rule is what's being talked about there. Okay? You know, and how many times on this world, does anyone remember, has the Most High Observer, you know, over the last 200,000 years, 33 times the Most High Observer has assumed regency. You know, and they mention an example of where it was validated for all to see with their eyes that this authority he's assuming is indeed absolute, not just merely supreme or ultimate. You know, the moment he assumed regency, who appeared next to that veranda deck? Personalized adjusters, right? Okay. The direct personal representatives of the absolute father. You know, just as a visual reminder to everyone that this is not ultimate authority he's wielding. He's wielding absolute authority. So saith the Father, literally, you know, in being form. You know, those personalized adjusters appeared by his side. Okay, so it's a very interesting concept to interject in here. You know, this idea of absolute and arbitrary authority. No, every rule is could potentially be overruled.
Could you explain or talk about why they say assigned to that planet?
Oh, okay. Another thing that you have going on with all these veranda decks that are more than you need just to be constellation rulers is you have a whole intelligence network. No, because, I mean, like, for instance, take our planet. I mean, we have a Most High Observer most definitively because of the rebellion, okay? But, see, an observer is assigned to a world to observe that world and report back to the boss, the Most Highs, you know, on Edentia, okay? That's all there is to it. They're just, you know, they're assigned to a world to observe. And one being can do it. So he's a pretty significant being. He can keep his eye on all of the minute details of a whole planet. One being. Let's see. What else we have there? Oh, yeah. The one thing I wanted to just notice, just to see it in passing here. Those spheres which have, through rebellion and default, you know, .. Notice how they just sort of put those together as if they're joined at the hip, rebellion and default. You know, just a little reminder that if a world has a rebellion, it's extremely likely it's going to have a default as well. It's very unlikely that poor Adam and Eve that are assigned to that world are going to be able to hold it together without a stable Anonadec, you know, there.
Jesus did that on one of his...
Yeah, right. I mean, there's exceptions, right? But, yeah, I just wanted you to notice that normally, you know, you can just put those together, rebellion and default. Okay? You know, and obviously you might have a default without a rebellion, but even that, see, I mean, how likely is it that the Adam and Eve are going to go into fault if you have an integrous planetary prince there to help them out? So it's probably pretty rare that you just have one. Mostly it's going to be both, like the neighboring planet had both. Yeah. All right. Okay. And and just the other thing, I didn't point it out directly, but you notice as soon as they got to this and they started talking about absolute and arbitrary authority, they stuck the Most High thing in there. Right. Just stress that fact. Now, we don't mean a self-aggrandized Most High, you know, like someone calling him the supreme leader of, you know, of their country or something. Right. Now, we're talking about literally Most High. Okay. All right. Let's keep going here.
Often a core of 12 or more of Adirondack suns sits in bonk.
On bonk.
Okay.
French.
As a high court of review and appeal concerning special cases involving the status of a planet or a system. But their work more largely pertains to the legislative functions indigenous to the constellation governments. As a result of all these services, the Adirondack suns have become the historians of the local universes. They are personally familiar with all the political struggles and the social upheavals of the inhabited worlds.
Okay, there's kind of two parts to that, so do the first part. So we've already stressed this close linkage between Adirondack, especially when they're serving as the Most Highs of a constellation, the linkage between them and the Ancients of Days. Okay, the Ancients of Days are the capital J judges. Okay, so, you know, that expression, if you're not familiar with it from, you know, our court system, for instance, en banc, just, you know, literally means in the bench. You know, so it's when you have, you know, like in a court of appeals and you got a number of judges, you know, and normally, you know, you just have a very small subset that, you know, oversees a particular case, but sometimes, you know, all of them, or at least, you know, a good portion of them, hear the case all together. The whole bench, you know, is going to, okay, en banc.
Why did they choose to throw in a French phrase there?
Well, I mean, it's not because it's used. Right. I mean, it's Englishized. Okay. I mean, you know, they didn't have to hyphenate it there. It's not literally throwing in French. It's been Englishized. You know, it's now a term that we use in English.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, ad hoc, or, you know, or, you know, a million things, a priori or whatever.
I must be in a cave then. I've never seen it before.
Yeah. Well, just, you know, you can quickly just look, you know, look up the Court of Appeals and you'll see they talk about en banc.
It sits on the bench. No, my attorney said they were talking about a
basketball
game.
Yeah.
Okay, so, see, the point they're trying to make is they purposely used our terminology for, you know, a court, you know, to make it as definitive as it should be in your mind. I mean, literally, the capital J judges sometimes have their sidekicks do the ominous thing of them all lining up, you know, across the bench, and you have to go before the bench, you know, and look who's going before the bench, a planet or a system, okay? Right? We call to the, you know, before the bench, the system of Satania. You know, and everyone, yeah. Yeah. Steps before the big bench and they, all right. Okay, see, so they're doing that capital J judge thing. They wanted it, you know, they wanted it to have that kind of ominous feel of being you know, of your case being so severe that you can't be seen by just three of the appellate court judges. You've got to sit in front of the whole bench. This is so extreme. Okay, so that's the ominous aspect of capital J judges. But their work more, you know, remember, mainly they're of the constellation, so they're of the legislative branch. The judicial branch is up at the at the local universe headquarters, not at the constellation level. But see, they're kind of doing that Most High thing there, you know, in a sense, they're kind of putting themselves above the local universe, you know, as even a higher judge. But see, normally they're down at the constellation level, doing that level where it's legislative. Executive down at the local system, judicial at the top, legislative in the middle. Okay, let's see. But and because they're so involved in, you know, in all of that legal aspect, like they're saying, they're intimately familiar with all the political struggles and social upheavals of inhabited worlds, and they become the de facto historians of all of the machinations and vicissitudes of, you know, of their domains. All right. The other thing there, yeah, notice that the number is 12 or more. You've got that definitive, the number 12 coming in, and so they're spanning that full spectrum of individuation that, you know, is involved at times, and you see the number 12 in the book. We won't go into the details of what that implies, but it's, you know, there's a whole spectrum of variation, and they're from one end of it to the other. They're having 12, but see, it's even maybe more. So, you know, I don't even know what that means. But all right, you got something?
I'm not sure exactly how to word this, but how does rebellion and default happen if the Veranda decks are so far seeing and have absolute power? And
because of the rules that are, I mean, it's, you know, for the question is, I know a local one. Why, you know, why have there been rebellions for us? It's kind of, you know, kind of what you're asking. And the answer to that question is, our Creator Son set up the overarching rules in our local universe that He is not going to make use of that far-seeing ability in the moment as much as another local, as is done in other local universes. So even though everyone for a long time could see exactly what was going to happen in Satania, I mean, it was trivial for them to see where Lucifer and crew were going. But the rule is not to intervene, you know, sort of in a more in-the-moment fashion and stop it before it starts. Michael's rule is let it play out. Now, occasionally, that's a rule that can be overruled. For instance, Emmanuel said, I'm going to, while you're on the seventh bestowal, it's just a further reminder that you are definitively consecrating your will to the fatherlike aspect of the sevenfold will in your seventh bestowal. It's a further example of how fatherlike it's going to be here in your local universe during this time. I'm going to overrule your rule about how to handle when we see things veering off. And I'm going to snuff it instantaneously. And I'm doing that because I'm bringing in the authority of the Ancients of Days, he says. You know, because he's a Union of Days. He's a direct representative of the Ancients of Days. You know, and so I'm going to do that super father thing, that very father-like thing. You know, and if you even blink wrong, I'm going to snuff you out. Okay, is what he says. Okay, if you go back and read that, it's a pretty amazing statement. You know, he's not even going to let you, you know, take the first step. You know, so there's local universes that are run like that, very tight. You know, there's not going to be a rebellion. You know, but our local universe, you know, is a mercy dominated. So you're going to let these things play out, and and Michael has given you the opportunity to choose integrity while staring in Lucifer's eyes. Okay? It's an opportunity that very few ascending mortals in the universe of universes have, to look an iniquitous being in the eye and say, no. Okay? But that's an opportunity we have. Okay? You can be an Agendanter. Something that most beings don't have the potential to be, because they're never going to see an iniquitous you know, leader, universe leader, you know, during their whole ascension career. Here first.
I've never noticed that they've mentioned who our Merodach son is. Do you recall?
they're going to mention, and they explain it in detail up in the Constellation paper. You know, we actually have kind of a special thing where we don't just have the three, but we have a group of 12. There's that 12 thing again. So there's actually 12 Merodachs, that are ruling things in Narlathotep. And then, of course, there's the rotating Merodach observer that's on our planet. But again, they don't give names for any of these, beings in general. What would it serve? They'd have to dream up, they'd have to coin some English name, It's like, why not Bob, I mean, it'd be kind of pointless.
Well, have to go default to rebellion to get mentioned in here.
They have a way of identifying themselves among one another.
Well, of course. I mean, they all have local universe names or in super universe names and stuff, but, what would be the point of dreaming up some English name, for him,
Are we ready to start?
No, he's got it.
In other words, in other universes, it's likely that there are no Agendantors to come forth.
Right, you can certainly imagine a local universe that would never have Agendantors, and you can even wonder about the first super universe. There may not be many Agendantors that come out of the first super universe, because that's the first master spirit, ruled universe. It's just like the seventh bestowal, where he's consecrating his will to the will of the first master spirit during his seventh bestowal, and it's very father-like. So I've mentioned that before. I mean, you wonder, is that the reason why the first ascender to make it, came from the first super universe? Grand Fonda came from the first super universe just because, there's just not a lot of chaos there. It's just kind of smooth sailing, and he's just, he got to the head of the class first because of that. There's so little complication to grind through. I don't know. all right.
Next paper.
Yep. Let's go on to
paper
the next section.
Paper 35, here. Section 6, the Constellation Fathers. At least three Merodachs are assigned to the rulership of each of the 100 constellations of a local universe. These sons are selected by the Creator Son and are commissioned by Gabriel as the most highs of the constellations for service during one decamillennium, 10,000 standard years, about 50,000 years of Urantia time. The reigning most high, the Constellation Father, has two associates, a senior and a junior. At each change of administration, the senior associate becomes the head of the government. The junior assumes the duties of the senior, while the unassigned Merodachs resident on the Salvington Worlds nominate one of their number as candidate for selection to assume the responsibilities of junior associate. Thus, each of the most high rulers, in accordance with present policy, has a period of service on the headquarters of a constellation of three decamillenniums, about 150,000 Urantia years.
Okay, just notice they threw it in there again. You see how they want you to pick this up. Did they have to throw in accordance with present policy? No, not in some immediate sense, but in the bigger sense, yes, they had to put it in there, remind you. I mean, they know that's a rule that could get overruled, maybe long term, and just changed. Okay. So again, don't think so rigidly about all the rules here. I mean, it's a personal, it's mind made and personality managed, the universe of universes. It's not managed by a computer, that you can just program the rules into. Okay? So no matter how mechanical some of these beings seem to be, the way they describe them and stuff, remember they're persons and they have free will. And sometimes they have the authority to exercise that free will in very dramatic ways, okay, and not be in rebellion when they do it. Okay, so that's in there. Let's see what else is in there.
Doesn't seem like a long time.
Right, it's not. So
That's why they got so many of them?
Right, see, so that's another thing. So you start to think about, so they don't really serve that long, so yeah, that's another reason why you'd want, so they can have a whole bunch to rotate through, and yeah, so that's another reason why there's seemingly a lot more than you need for 100 constellations, and, you know, it's like, if you just three, it's just 300, it's like, you know, why do we need a million, right? Okay, so that's, see, it obviously seems to be between the lines there. We'll see that the reason for this threefoldness here in just a little bit. So I won't explain that yet. You might be wondering, you know, why three? Well, you'll see they give us some clues here in a second. Oh, yeah, good question here.
Can a Veranda deck, since they can learn, can they ever become a Melchizedek?
No.
So they're stuck.
They're not stuck.
Non-promotable.
See, again, you know, he might say, remember they call me a Most High. I'm in many ways I'm already above a Melchizedek, so that would be going down. that's kind of part of this rigidness I was just kind of speaking to. You've got a lot of beings that are very horizontal in nature. They don't have any definitive verticalness to them. They're not ascending or descending, you know, really in some, you know, bigger sense of the word. They're descending sons in the sense that they descended and then they stay, okay? they serve at a given level for trillions and hundreds of trillions of years.
Hundreds of trillions.
Not thousands of trillions, okay?
Can't even wrap my head.
Okay, an awful lot of the beings in here are like that. They're essentially stationary beings. You know, they serve at a given level. That's why I say if you think about that, it's like, wow, you'd have to be a total machine to not be claustrophobic. You know, to be stuck on it, stuck as we say it, see, on a level for hundreds of trillions of years doing the same old thing over and over. That's why it's so important to remember that they're persons and they're functioning in personal ways that are beyond our imagination. How do they experience it? They experience a liberty of personality we can't even imagine because they experience a definitiveness of law that we've never known.
Do they have personality?
Remember, yes, of course they do. And I've stressed this so many times. In order to more definitively manifest your personality, you have to put yourself into cooperative subordination with greater degrees of law. It's not what your animal origin self thinks. Okay, it thinks that those are at odds with each other, that law is against liberty. No, it's liberty in law. Okay, and notice I'm not the first person to say that. I think it's actually sung in a certain country on this planet. Thy liberty in law, right? Okay, this is one of the fundamental truths that we've tried to instill in the foundation of this country. An opportunity for people to be more personal than any country that's ever existed because we're going to be more definitively a nation of laws. And so if we follow the Lucifer sophistry and say, I want more liberty for my personality, I want to ignore laws, you know, which is more and more the voice in this nation. Okay, that's the Lucifer rebellion. Okay, that's the sophistry that your immature animal origin self is susceptible to. Thinking that laws are an affront to liberty. Yeah. No, they are the only means for liberty. And so this incredibly rigid structure that our animal origin self sees them as being in is actually the most liberated, free thing that you could imagine. So just put those two, juxtapose those, and feel how that is not immediately understandable to you. How could absolute rigidness of law lead to absolute liberty of free will? The fact that that doesn't make sense is because none of us in this room are very much persons yet. We're just selves. So that doesn't make sense to us as a mere self. You know, if we were more personal, we would get that. Right. If you start to reflect on it logically, see, it starts to make sense. But the animal origin selves don't reflect on anything logically. That's my point. So take the light in cultivating a consciousness that can start to logically recognize that that's not illogical. Initially it sounds absurd. And that's the truth of truth. All truth sounds absurd to an animal origin mind. That's the challenge. You know, do you have the courage to approach something that initially you sense as absurd, your animal origin self senses as absurd, and figure out if it really is absurd, or if it just appeared to be absurd to your animal origin subjective mind, and it's actually truth. If you penetrate through the skin, you know, that only your animal origin mind can see, and see what's really there, that's why it takes courage. Because the things that you're going to allow the opportunity to take you somewhere, at least mentally, initially strike you as absurd. But if you're just in that mode, where you're just going to dismiss it just like that, that's absurd. I'm not even going to give it a second thought. You're never going to find truth. The only truth you'll have is the little bit you were given by grace. And you're living on the fumes of that. Okay? If you're going to get a hold of truth yourself, you have to have the courage to take on something that initially seems absurd.
But think about it, I would think their life wouldn't be boring at all. And if you think about it, there's so much going on. And now the guy who's running our relation deck now, he came from another rebellious constellation. He was trained, and then they get to...
Just running our local system, you mean?
They get to do a lot of different things, and it's kind of, in a way, that's their purpose. That's what they're here for. That's what they are. What's interesting to me, and I think I remember they say that when your whole universe becomes an enlightened life, or your constellations, their functions change a little bit.
Oh yeah. So, right. Yeah, they're going to radically change. Yeah.
Yeah, and so they may still be here, but as children from outer space coming through perfected supreme universe, they're going to have some other functions out
there. Right, but I was just trying to keep it to the this age.
Keep it simple.
Now when I said hundreds of trillions of years, okay, there is a asterisk there. I mean, things do change when the local universe becomes settled in light and life somewhere during those hundreds of trillions of years. There's still no outer space level beings or anything, but we're still just in this age. These hundreds of trillions of years, but their roles are going to change. But they are still, at the constellation level. It's just that the local universe kind of dissolves and just becomes part of the super universe. And there's these local nodes in the super universe structure that are called constellations. See, with the Most High is ruling them. See. So it becomes a new hierarchical structure. But that's what I was saying, they still pretty much, are on that level. Okay. Let's see, there was something you said there that, it was a really good point I was going to bring up. Ah, dang it, what was it? About not being bored. First of all, remember that the only reason the word bored is in the dictionaries because we're not very definitively personal. Animals get bored, persons don't. So that's one thing. So they're not going to be technically bored. But no. It was the right word. The contrast is, why do we get bored? It's because we aren't exercising a definitive personal nature. And what's definitively personal? Creativity. See, they don't get quote unquote bored because they have creativity like we can't even imagine. Everything to them is an exciting, infinite potential of opportunities. They can hardly wait to get a hold of it. Imagine, you know, like if they're really, really far seeing, you know, there's even more potentials that they see than the Melchizedek sees. You know, Melchizedek is going, oh boy, this looks grim. The Rondek going, oh no, this is really cool. Yeah, I mean, this is going to be so cool 100 million years from now. Wait, watch what I do with it. Because he has creativity. He can see it. And, you know, and so, see, that's, you know, if we were more personal, we would see everything as a potential instead of a wanting actual. Okay. Everything would be a limitless potential if we really had a creative mind. A personalized mind. Okay, let's see. Where were we? Were we ready for the second one? Okay, yes. Yeah, so yeah, I think we got everything out of that previous one, didn't we? Yeah. Let's go ahead.
The 100 constellation fathers, the actual presiding heads of the constellation governments, constitute the supreme advisory cabinet of the Creator Sun. This council is in frequent session at universe headquarters. And is unlimited in the scope and range of its deliberations, but is chiefly concerned with the welfare of the constellations and with the unification of the administration of the entire local universe.
Okay, so other than the technical little thing that the literal Most High is often in confab with the Creator's Son. That last part we were just talking about that. Remember, this is the whole effort that's going on. They're trying to get themselves so that they have a level of coordination, a level of cosmic harmony, that is ever higher and higher until it's up at super universe level, sort of the bottom of the super universe, you know, and they can blend into the super universe. Remember, like we've read way back here now, we are so not at that level right now, okay? I mean, we don't even have representation, you know? The ancients of the day say, come back in a long time, okay, when you're worthy of standing before me. We are so lowly right now, okay? And so they're working constantly on this. They've got to try to get, at this level, 100 very definitively individuated constellations. You know, each of them have their whole different set of laws. There's a legislative branch in each one of those. And so they have, they start out, those laws are all attuned to the very different facts in that constellation, which are very, they're very different from this one. So it starts out as this hodgepodge, and they've got to work on bringing that up into a unified whole. Okay, so it's going to just take constant, oversight by them. So that's, that's the main purpose of the primary Most High, is to be intimately interacting with the Creator Son on this issue.
How fast do you think they go?
The Verondadex, I'm pretty sure, have to take a seraphic transport, and so they just go 3 times the speed of light. And so that's why you're going to see what they say here next. The fact that he needs to be in meetings all the time, okay, he's just there all the time, basically. The Most High, the primary Most High, is usually not on Adentia, in our case. He's usually, on Salvington. They're just about to point that out here.
When a Constellation Father is in attendance upon duties at the universe headquarters, as he frequently is, the Senior Associate becomes Acting Director of Constellation Affairs. The normal function of the Senior Associate is the oversight of spiritual affairs, while the Junior Associate is personally occupied with the physical welfare of the Constellation. No major policy, however, is ever carried out in a Constellation unless all three of the Most Highs are agreed upon all the details of its execution.
Okay, so now they're giving you the clue. So you have the Senior Associate is dealing with spiritual affairs, the junior with physical affairs. Okay, so the, you know, you should immediately going, oh, okay, you have the unity for the one, the individuality for the other. Remember the constellation level is the associativity level. Okay, the local system's the individuality level, constellation's the associativity level, the local universe headquarters is the unity level. So they're fundamentally about associativity. How do they go about being about associativity? They have three of them. One takes each pole of that relationship, of unity related to individuality, and the primary Most High, see, is definitively about the associativity, the superadditive consequence of those two. So they literally form that triad of the two below at eye level, and then the superadditive consequence of the associativity between individuality and unity. And the role of the senior Most High is to see to the associativity directly. And that's what's being represented then up at the local universe headquarters. Okay, so see that's why they have three. That's how it works. So they just are literally embodying the triunity in the threefoldness of their rulership. All right. Let's see. Yeah. So like I said there, John, you see he as he frequently is. Right. So just you know, the logistics of it, it would just be easier for him to. Basically be there. And that's not, you know, this last issue about how if they need to do something, they have to do it in a full triunity consciousness, the three of them, you know, making sure that all three anchor points are there and then coming together as a triunity. So they only rule in that triunity fashion. But even then, he wouldn't necessarily have to be, you know, standing next to them.
Yeah, could be reflective.
Okay, because you have reflectivity and all these other things, right? As they're just about to mention here. You know, it's probably logistically easiest for him to just be there a lot of times because, you know, if it's a remote constellation, it's just going to be a long trek for him to haul from Salvington, you know, back and forth. So, always he's far-seeing. He's far-seeing. He's planning ahead. Getting his club selection on Adentia right now. We'll start with you know the golf courses and the gardens, you know, hemisphere of Adentia. And all right, let's read some more.
The entire mechanism of spirit intelligence and communication channels is at the disposal of the constellation Most Highs. They are in perfect touch with their superiors on Salvington and with their direct subordinates, the sovereigns of the local systems. They frequently convene in council with these system sovereigns to deliberate upon the state of the constellation.
Okay, maybe just that last part first. See how, so you have kind of a downstepped expression there of each constellation, you know, rulership and trying to coordinate all these local systems. But, you know, there you see that they're in perfect touch, you know, they say. Okay, so. Obviously, you know, a lot of things you know, wouldn't have to be done literally face-to-face. And notice it's not just communication channels. It's also intelligence. Okay, those observers we were talking about. Okay, they have eyes on the ground. Okay, and they are gathering intelligence. And they're reporting back. Outside of the communication channels. There are some things that the Most Highs need to talk about and know about that they're not going to stick on the broadcast circuits, like the fact that Lucifer is about to go rebellion. They didn't put that on. You know, they're using their secret intelligence okay, you know, mechanism. You know,
tweeted.
Yeah. Right. No one's tweeting it, yes, exactly. So just notice, you know, they put both in there. So there's the open and the private channels of information. All right.
The Most High surround themselves with a corps of counselors, which varies in number and personnel from time to time in accordance with the presence of the various groups at Constellation Headquarters and also as the local requirements vary. During times of stress, they may ask for and will quickly receive additional sons of the Rondedeck Order to assist with the administrative work. Nerlashadeck, your own constellation, is at present administered by 12 Rondedeck sons.
So again, we see why there's, you know, there's a goodly number of them. And like I mentioned, you know, they explain in detail when you get up to the constellation papers about how we have 12 in the wake of the rebellion. All right, let's go to the next notch here. So remember, we had the Melchizedek worlds. You know, so again, just I don't have to repeat it in context here. Remember, we've got Salvington in the central spot, and we have 70 primary satellites in a string of pearls going all the way around. And it's broken up into 10 groups, 10 segments of pearls, seven primary satellites in each segment. We did the first segment with the first seven worlds, the Melchizedek worlds. Now we're going to do the next seven worlds along the string, the Vorondedeck worlds. And the same way, each of those seven have six sub-satellites around them, so that each one of those has that that sevenfoldness of that we talked about, that that's building up a full Trinity perspective, like you have as you go through the seven circuits of Avona. And it's just the way it's expressed is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, in the middle.
Do we have any idea in light years how far away these are?
No, we really don't. Other than roughly.
The reason I ask is just the other night on the news, they showed this cosmic ray coming out of a black hole, and they said it was 324 light years away.
When you're working with local systems, you're on the order of tens of light years.
Okay.
Constellations, hundreds, and local universes.
So we could possibly spot one of these structures at some point.
We're not going to see any of these things, no, because they're not luminous.
Oh, okay. That, that changes it.
Right. A little hard to see. They're dark points in a very dark background. Right.
Okay, ready?
I was talking about that. So just remember the pattern again that we have. We have the tenfold going around. So that's the tenfold individuality, and then in each segment we have the sevenfold unity. But then for each one of those seven, you have another sevenfold that's not. That sevenfold unity along the string, the primary world, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, that's like the seven super universes, the seven master spirits, the seven worlds of the Father, etc. That's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 as you go around the center of all things, as opposed to right angles to that, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of going on the seven circuits of Avona. So these two different sevens, and it's for each, so there's a measure of Trinity-ness, Trinity wholeness to each one of these primary satellites and its six sub-satellites. So the seven together are going to give you the whole picture of something.
This is starting from something coming down. We start, when we go there, we come up, right? Because the last worlds.
No. You start on Melchizedek. You start on the pilot world.
The other way.
Yeah. So we'll do the, we're going to, you read about them in the book in the order that we'll experience them.
Paper. Explain the word
Nerlashadeck. Nor is, again, you can see the Northern European here. N-O-R is north. L-A is law. The T-I-A is place. So, you know, forget about the deck for a second. Basically, the name of our constellation is Norlatia. Okay, the northern law place. Okay, law because it's legislative at the constellation level. Okay, and they're giving you a little hint. And if you could see the geography of Nebadon, our constellation is in the northern regions of the local universe of Nebadon. You know, in the direction, you know, if you keep going that way, you finally get to the first super universe, that kind of north. So that's the only way they give you, disclose that little tidbit is in the name, you know, saying it's a constellation and it's in the northern regions of the local universe. The deck part is added. Again, you know, we know that's related to Melchizedek, and you know, this, there's my special Melchizedek identification with this constellation. They've got two special colleges here, you know, in this constellation, you know, colleges of the Melchizedek University, you know, because of the rebellion and because of the seventh bestowal. So that's what the deck is there for. It's a little reminder that we have this special Melchizedek identification with this. But more fundamentally, it's Norlatia is the name of the constellation. Okay.
Paper 35, section 7, the Veranda Deck Worlds. The second group of seven worlds in the circuit of 70 primary spheres surrounding Salvington comprise the Veranda Deck planets. Each of these spheres, with its six encircling satellites, is devoted to a special phase of Veranda Deck activities. On these 49 realms, the ascending mortals secure the acme of their education respecting universe legislation.
Okay, there's a simple example of what I've been talking about. Okay, that probably felt a little deflating. You got to be kidding me. That's what I want to learn about is universe legislation. Okay. Sounds kind of dry. Well, at least there's only one world. No. There's 49 gigantic worlds. Okay. We obviously don't have the creativity to even imagine, you know, how that could be exciting. That sounds like the antithesis of exciting. So again, I'm not very personal, because that's what it feels like to me. Is, but when I'm there, I'm going to be very definitively personal, and you know, this is just going to be so exciting somehow that I can't even imagine right now.
Well, but when you think about, you know, they say somewhere else about how, you know, they wonder why we're being trained so in-depthly at administration for the future of our career, whatever, you know, maybe in the seventh stage of being a finality or whatever. So this is just a part of being trained, I would think.
Of course it is.
Administration part, which I bet it's a whole lot different than the way we...
Right. We're going to...
You're right about that.
I mean, I'm purposely teasing like that, but because I'm setting up the thing they're going to say here. Okay.
I didn't bring my glasses.
But the fact that, you know, let's just play on that a little bit more. I mean, remember what, you know, what we're talking about here when we read that and you remind us how they say, you know, you have no idea how extensively you're going to be trained in administration, and you're going, yuck. Okay, the fact that your animal origin self says yuck, that's what Lucifer took a hold of, remember? You know, that debauchery, you know. You know, you're being thrown into this machine. You know, you're made this cog in this machine and being trained, you know, all these disciplines and, you know, you don't have liberty. You're in bondage.
The Borg.
Right?
The Borg.
Right.
The
Borg. Right.
Exactly.
See? That's why I'm trying to stress this. Remember, I mean, this tension that you might feel is exactly why you may not want to give Lucifer a shot. Okay, give me your best argument, Lucifer. You may not want to try that quite yet. You might be surprised. You're like, wow, I think I'm going to totally jump in with you. I mean, he played this very well. this lack of personality consciousness in lower beings, be they angels or whatnot, they don't have enough personality awareness. They're too much just a self, you know, that doesn't find this exciting to grind away millions and billions of years on one level as a cog. You know, think about how we would have talked to angels. You know, I said, think about your life. Think about what you've been doing for the last 20 billion years. Same old thing every damn day, right? Don't you love to be free? Join me, you know? Those are arbitrary rules, and they need to be arbitrarily broken, you know? If we would just assume our rights as absolute beings, you know, we can overrule that. This is what, you know, all those lower beings that have this grinding life from a mere self perspective, from a not very personal perspective, that's how he attracted them. He just reminded them of the drudgery. And they just went over to his side in a heartbeat. You know, instead of encouraging them to go up and be more objective and think about it personally, see it in the long term, be far-seeing. You know, they can't, they're not very far-seeing, you know. And when he got them to really look at all they can see, you know, the little tent of circle they're in and the drudgery that it is, it was easy to take him over to his side.
Okay.
Okay, so just see, you know, think about how problematic that tendency you have as an animal origin being to be bored and whatnot. That's your Achilles heel in the face of someone like Lucifer. So you need to work on getting above that level, that tendency. All right.
The ascending mortals have observed the legislative assemblies as they functioned on the headquarter worlds of the constellations. But here on these Verandadec worlds, they participate in the enactment of the actual general legislation of the local universe under the tutelage of the senior Verandadecs. Such enactments are designed to coordinate the varied pronouncements of the autonomous legislative assemblies of the 100 constellations. The instruction to be had in the Verandadec schools is unexcelled, even on Uversa. This training is progressive, extending from the first sphere with supplemental work on its six satellites, on up through the remaining six primary spheres and their associated satellite groups.
Okay, so again, just, you know, there's some whole nugget, you know, of the overall instruction, you know, that is embodied in each set of seven, six sub-satellites in the primary, and you're going through that one, you know, one unit at a time. Okay, and here we see we get a little bit more of that. They reminded us about how the constellation father, you know, the primary of the three, is so often up there working with Michael. And, you know, what else is involved in that? You have a legislative activity that's going on, you know, at the local universe level that they're just describing here, trying to coordinate all of the individuated local constellation level legislation. And so you're going to be actually directly participating in that. In other words, so think about how much objectivity you have, how much of a relation to the whole you'll have. When you're up at that level, you'll be able to see the whole local universe in the big picture. You'll be able to appreciate those 100 different individualities of those constellations, and you'll be able to think in that space. It's like, oh yeah, you know, if you play it like this, you'll get a wonderful symphony out of it. You know, so play one, you know, have this one play these notes, and then have this one play these notes, and right. So you're going to see that sort of coordination into a whole like that, so that you can actually chime in and, you know, and make suggestions. And they go, oh, that's a great idea. You know, remember this started, remember how they remind us when we're at the constellation level and we actually get resident status on the constellation headquarters world, in our case Adentia, we get to work directly with the Most Highs doing some of their kind of most high eyes above sort of things. Kind of the little mini judges sort of assessment that goes on. You know, and they told you when you get up to Yuversa, you get to stand right next to side by side with capital J judges, the Ancients of Days, and, you know, chime right in with their objectivity on it. So at every level, you know, see, this is what you're doing. You're getting so that you can embrace that measure of the whole. And you're just taking that up notch by notch. Like I said, it's a process of step by step putting yourself in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. See, so having attuning yourself to the whole, where the whole is hierarchical. And as you go up, it goes out. And that's how you're working your way up. You know, and at each level, it'll have a little different flavor. The whole will, you know, look, feel differently at that level, but it'll still be the whole. Okay. let's see. All right, I think that's basically there. Yeah, go ahead.
The ascending pilgrims will be introduced to numerous new activities on these worlds of study and practical work. We are not forbidden to undertake the revelation of these new and undreamed of pursuits, but we despair of being able to portray these undertakings to the material mind of mortal beings. We are without words to convey the meanings of these supernal activities, and there are no analogous human engagements which might be utilized as illustrations of these new occupations of the ascending mortals as they pursue their studies on these 49 worlds. And many other activities not a part of the ascendant regime are centered on these Verandadec worlds of the Salvington Circuit.
Okay, see, so that's, like I said, you're coming to this. They're kind of helping us here in this issue I've been bringing up, that, you know, don't be too hard on yourself, that you can't find the personality consciousness to make this sound alive. You know, it's just impossible for us right now. It's so high relative to where we are, we can't even remotely imagine it. I mean, we just, like they're saying, there's nothing they can even do to remotely suggest these areas of creativity to you. I mean, you have no idea that these things even exist, these spheres of potential in your personality. You know, it just is a reminder that we should kind of just stick to trying to imagine the first mansion worlds, you know, and assessing yourself as maybe needing, I think I need to take it up a notch. Be careful about bringing in a lot of the other book, you know, the rest of the book, and what it's revealing at, you know, much higher levels above the mansion worlds, you know, into direct comparison with your day-to-day life. It's beyond our imagination, and so it's going to bring in attention that's not necessary. It's going to tend to take you right where they're trying to get us out of, this mode of thinking where we compare ourselves with absolute perfection, and we find ourselves wanting. You know, and this is the way we've always judged ourselves. No sense of goodness is being perfecting, but only goodness is perfect, you know, in that extreme absolute sense in some way. And so be careful about bringing all these things that in many ways are kind of effectively absolute. They're so beyond our ability. You know, it's just going to be, it's an unnecessary bondage, you know, sort of a burden to put upon yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we watch our body disintegrate. Mm-hmm. Both, all of that's gone. So, fear, you know, what does that look like?
Well, you know, as you can. No, no, I'm not going to tell you from experience, but as you can as you can tell by reflecting on what happened in this local system, it's a double-edged sword. You liberate yourself from those immediate issues of being, you know, barely more than a, you know, an animal and subject to carnivores and whatnot and the laws of the jungle. So you wake up on the first mansion world, and you quickly come to recognize that you've left that behind. But what you now are in possession of is a liberty that you never had before. A potential liberty that you never had before. You know, it's like, wow, imagine what I could do if I didn't have to worry about I have to try to fit it into, you know, 3 score years and 10, or by reason of strength 4 score. Yeah, what if I can just let go of all of that? At that level of consciousness, even quite a bit above that level, there's a being named Lucifer. Who, you know, so that you'll let go of these issues and immediately have even more pressing ones. Of that to him whom much is given is much expected. You now will have in many ways the liberty that you yearn for right now, but it can be your undoing quickly. If you don't bring humility, you know, with you on that journey, and that's, you know, that's the issue. Lucifer didn't come adequately equipped with humility. We don't come adequately equipped with humility. We have to choose to be humble. We won't naturally be as humble as we need to be. You know, and it's even more of a conscious choice when you don't have the lumpenness of the flesh to remind you of being humble. You know, as you watch your face sag with age, okay, I guess I need to be humble, don't I? Okay. Yeah, it's very humbling. A lot of these material things kind of forces a little bit of humility on you. You aren't quite so brash and 20-something, you know? Okay. But what if I liberated myself from that? What if I had an eternal facelift? You know, what if I had perfectly tight skin, you know, forever?
Better skin every life.
Yeah, and I right. Okay, would that start to go to my head? Went to Lucifer's head. You know, he looked in the mirror and he saw what all those beings saw. Incredible radiance. Look at me, you know? Right? You know, he didn't have to say mirror, mirror on the wall. It was obvious. Okay, I'm looking at it. So this is the foible. See, can we remain humble and patient, and you know, all these things in the midst of all this new freedom? See, technically, and I was going to get to this point. Technically, you want to contrast between liberty and freedom. You have a new freedom of self. Liberty, it's a spiritual word, okay, that's kind of like it's always been. And it's this definitive binary thing, true or false liberty. So independent of how much freedom yourself has, and as you go up, your freedom yourself has greater and greater freedom. You know, it's less in bondage to the inertia of matter and whatnot, you know, as you go higher, higher, more onto levels. But, you know, can you take that personality liberty and master that self? Personal responsibility and self-control implies true liberty. Not implies false liberty. You know, if you If you assume that the freedom of the self is liberty, okay, that's the battle cry of the Lucifer Rebellion. See, self-assertion, i.e., self, you know, the freedom of the self is liberty. Okay, and you know, it's innately divine. It doesn't need to be controlled. Okay. So you know, that's what we're looking towards. You know, and we wake up on the first mansion world. It's now much more in play than it ever was before. We don't have such a boat anchor attached to us. You know, and now do we have the requisite recognition of personal responsibility and execution of self-control to rein in such a free self, free at last.
Control you, and then right. you are a prisoner to
right.
that
right.
control.
Right, you know, yeah.
But we got helpers.
We have lots of helpers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and,
right.
And
but
the mansion wars aren't ruled by the rebellion.
No, they aren't. They aren't, right. Right, I know. See, the positive, you know, there's more than hope. It's absolutely certain that you'll make it, unless you absolutely choose not to. Right, I mean, that's just always in play. I mean, there's nothing stacked against you in terms of the environment and whatnot. I mean, it couldn't be more stacked in your favor. The whole universe of universes is conspiring in your favor. Okay, you have infinite help. Okay, but you have absolute free will. You can do that arbitrary thing, and you can overrule all the help. You know, so as long as you aren't that hell bent, quote unquote, on self, you know, you're fine. You're completely fine. There's nothing to be afraid of, but it just, you know, you want to be clear about this. It's the liberty and law thing. Here, go here. Katie had a question.
I've been thinking about rules.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about playing games. And some of my favorite games are games where the rules are kind of complex. And when I have achieved those rules, when I've understood those rules and I can exercise those rules, consistently, then, and I feel like I really can embrace them, kind of second natured, then when I'm playing a game, it's way fun and I can get really creative and very intuitive about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I learn, oh, there's another level of this game, so I can bump up another level. And I can learn those additional rules and exceptions and other nuances, then it gets way interesting. I can get even more creative and have way more fun. Mm-hmm. So I was just thinking, you know, what if learning more and more about the truth of things, the reality of things, and you know, reflecting on the reality of the cosmos and incorporating more and more of that truth, I think that will give us more intuition about what our potential is.
Yeah, right. You've very eloquently expressed, you know, one of the reasons why you have a 2,000-page, very complex thing in your lap. See, that's the unexpected benefit of making the effort to come into relationship with all this complexity, you know, and even going, like you're saying, and then discovering it's even more complex than it initially appears, you know, that it just tells you, it just shows you the doorways, you know, to some things. It's like, you think this is complex, let's try total deity, okay? Or you think this is complex, let's try unpacking the central universe, okay? You know, there's whole vistas that this just, you know, gives you the little openings to, and yes, that's what you begin to discover, is it gets more and more exciting the more that you can think in such a multi-dimensional complex space. However, we know, see, it's sad to record that there's a lot of people on the planet who, when they get a board game, you know, if it has more than one paragraph for rules, they throw it out and get a different board game. Because that many rules is boring. You know, it's literally a board game.
That's why I play golf, because it's before you call a penalty on yourself.
Right, and it has a lot of complex rules, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, in this life, there's an expression, what's the hardest part about being old? It's remembering your youth. That when you didn't have control over all the freedom that you had, you had no control, and you have all these regrets and things, how crazy you were. Think about a mature Maranchan being, you know, when they first hit the Maranchan world with the new freedoms, you know, you have to be really careful that you're not building up a lot of regrets, you know, to control that freedom and those opportunities. Are we going to have a teenage year there? Is that why they isolate us?
Well, yeah, that's why I was, you know, I kind of slipped in there, you know, free at last, you know, I mean, it's that, you know, there's that tendency of adolescence, you know, the moment you start to sense that you're on the verge of not kind of just instinctually, you know, looking to mom and dad, it's like, well, I'm thinking about this. And what do you think? You know, where you turn and want to get some validation, some confirmation that's, you know, but you get to 16 roughly, you know, and then that changes. That tendency goes away, and it's like, you know, you just go for it. Because, you know, that's a literal phenomenon, and you've literally separated yourself mindly from your parents at basically age 16. That's mind conception. You know, and so you don't have that just automatic, you know, turning to them, you know, let alone running and grabbing mom's leg, you know, after you try to explore a couple feet away and then run back, you know. You know, you've been working on this, you know, you've been slowly working your way farther and farther, you know, physically and then mentally until finally, you know, you're ready to set off as a separate mental phenomenon. Right. But oh boy, you know, the moment you discover that mental liberty, mental freedom, see, technically, right? you know, there's all these issues. That's what I'm just saying. I mean, imagine what it's going to be like. You know, you've been living your whole life in relative terms in a very tiny space called agitant mind. Guess what it's going to be like the moment you open your eyes and you're in this gigantic space called Maranchan mind. Okay.
You get 70 senses.
You're going to need some, it's like, okay, now just breathe slowly. Okay. Because it could, you know, you could get ahead of yourself in your excitement. Okay. There's Maranchan oxygen. Remember, there's three different gases. And you drink literal H2O physical water. Let's just wrap this up here. There was one other little thing there in that second to the last paragraph. As you started reading the last one, I was like, oh yeah, there was one thing I was going to say there. Just wanted to point out, the instruction to be had in the Virandadek schools is unexcelled even on Yuvarsa. Okay, so that's kind of similar to that statement they made about Melchizedek, when you landed on Melchizedek, and how, you know, it'll rival your, you know, experience on paradise. So again, it's reminding you not to think too simplistically, you know, linearly, vertically, that just, you know, the next notch up is totally leaves everything below in the dust. It's not always like that. It's a whole. And so there's a horizontalness in the midst of the verticalness always. Just because some things are vertically arranged, other things are horizontally arranged. You know, so like here, you're a long ways below Yuvarsa in many ways, but they're saying, in other ways, you're horizontally. You're right there side by side. You know, if not even above, you know, see, you know, it's not excelled even on Yuvarsa. You know, and so in some ways it might have shades of Havona-like quality, see. Okay, you know, more at that eye level. But the thing that, you know, that they're certainly wanting to remind you of just immediately by comparing like that, saying unexcelled even on Universa, is again that linkage between the Veronidex Sons and the Ancients of Days. Okay. So that's just a really key element. As John was reminding us earlier, and I mentioned often, you know, definitively comes into play once the local universe is settled in light and life. You know, and basically this line that divides a local universe from the greater super universe proper, you know, melts away. And it really kind of just all becomes one mind domain. You know, it's part of that bigger whole then. And in that context, the creative mother spirit now, you know, is still ministering to those beings that are just of her local universe, you know, ministering to them mindily. But the administrative aspect of her and the Creator Son in being, you know, separate from the rest of the super universe, that kind of melts away. And, you know, he most of the time, he's not even in the local universe. He's, you know, on paradise. And the Ancients of Days and the Most Highs are running things, you know, along with some of the other Trinity beings. So, yeah. So the Veronidex, you know, it all is really, really definitively in the name they chose, in these very father-like expressions, and that just that dictates what they're doing now, what they've done in the past, and what they're going to do in the future. It just kind of tells the whole story in just one word right away. If you just think about the consequences of them being very father-like,
is the last father.
No, we'll get to that next time. We'll see what Lananadec means.
Are we stopping there?
Yep. So we're going to stop there because we're right here in time. So let's just take a moment here and we'll reflect on it.